I'm Marty Moskowin, and welcome to The Connection. In an ideal world, families are a source of unconditional love and support. They give us the confidence to make our mark in the world, to fully bond with other people and find joy and fulfillment in our life. But there is no such world and no ideal family. There can be conflicts, hurt feelings, long-standing resentments, rivalry, shameful secrets, and in some cases, neglect, abuse, and violence. Today on The Connection, we take an in-depth look at family estrangement. For some, it's about creating an emotional distance because of festering unresolved issues. Some families just seem to drift apart and lose contact over time. For others, estrangement is about severing ties completely for their emotional survival because of what feels like a toxic relationship. We'll talk about what drives families apart, how they can rebuild their relationships, and what to do when reconciliation is impossible. Let me introduce our two guests. Psychologist Joshua Coleman is a senior fellow with the Council on Contemporary Families. He wrote a book called Rules of Engagement, Why Adult Children Cut Ties and How to Heal the Conflict. Joshua Coleman, nice to have you with us today on The Connection.
Thanks for having me. And the book is Rules of Estrangement, not Engagement, just so you know.
Oh, well, you know what? I wrote Estrangement and I said Engagement. So there you go. Thanks for the...
you're
I should
the
read what I wrote, but thank you for that correction. Let me introduce our other guest, and that is developmental psychologist Lucy Blake, senior lecturer at the University of the West of England. She wrote a book called No Family is Perfect, A Guide to Embracing the Messy Reality. Lucy, I hope I got your book title correct, and nice to have you with us today on The Connection.
You did, and thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. Let me start with you, Joshua Coleman, if I could, and in doing my homework for the show today. Of course, I ran across, you know, one headline after another, family estrangement, family estrangement. Is this something that is just more common, or are we just reading more about it?
No, I think it is more common. I think there's good reasons to assume that there is, from my perspective. Estrangement is associated with rising rates of individualism being a preoccupation or an orientation around oneself, one's happiness, one's identity, one's personal growth. I think there's been a fundamental shift in the moral framework over the past half century, away from honor thy mother and thy father, respect thy elders, family is forever, however problematic that may be, to this much more present-day orientation around self-esteem, personal happiness, personal growth, mental health. And then we also have social media as a big amplifier of these issues. Instagram influencers telling you who's a toxic, narcissistic parent. Add on to that political differences, which also become a seed of estrangement. So I think we're in a very different moment. And one last point is the role of therapy and therapists and therapeutic narratives in terms of being kind of guideposts about who to have in your life and who not to.
I will pick up on as much of that as I possibly can. Let me get your perspective, Lucy Blake. I mean, how do you see this phenomenon of family estrangement?
Yeah, I really appreciate Josh's perspective there. I do disagree just in that, as a researcher looking at data sets of kind of tens of thousands of people in different countries, we don't have any evidence yet that estrangement is increasing in rate. I think Josh is absolutely right, and it's definitely an issue that's on our radar more, certainly on social media. And just in the media more generally, thinking of kind of famous estrangements, perhaps in the royal family, I think it's an issue we talk about a lot more than we did 10 years ago. But I don't personally think it's on the rise, although I think it's something we see and hear and speak about and acknowledge more than we used to.
Yes, and it's got to be very painful. Let me go back to you, Joshua. What are the various reasons? I would assume divorce being one of the major reasons for estrangement. What else?
Well, just to sort of counter what Lucy was saying, I mean, if we just look at divorce rates in my survey of 1,600 estranged parents, 70% of those had been through a divorce. So Lucy's right that we don't have kind of a starting point to measure estrangement. But if we just look at divorce rates, we know that divorce is associated with estrangement, with parental alienation, that and non-marital childbirth. And, there's research that today 40% of children in the United States are born outside of marriage, that those particularly for dads are associated with estrangement. So, so certainly divorce. Also, when a child marries, if their spouse doesn't like the parent, then that can be a target. If the therapist wrongly attributes the adult functioning to, or rightly attributes adult functioning to problems in the adult child, that can be a trigger. Mental illness, certainly on the part of the parent, and abuse on the part of the parent, but mental illness or addictive issues on the part of the adult child as well. So those are all really common pathways to estrangement.
In fact, you write that difficult son or daughter-in-law relationships is one of the most intractable problems. And I guess we're talking about sort of bringing someone else into the family, and you know, your child or your son or daughter, you know, says they love this person and yet you don't. That's got to be tough.
It's really tough, and it's not incredibly intractable, but it does mean often that parents have to work very hard to repair either whatever damage they've done in the relationship with the child's spouse or to their child if they were critical of them or negative towards them, because that can really be a very difficult problem to solve.
Lucy Blake, let me go back to you. And when we're talking about estrangement, and there are obviously varying degrees of it, but let's just say where a member of the family, usually the child, cuts off their relationship with a parent or maybe both. Do these tend to happen sort of out of the blue, or are we talking about long festering problems?
I think the answer there depends to some extent on who you're speaking with and speaking to. It's a really complex one because no two estrangements are the same, but it might be from one person's perspective that there's been an issue that has been building up and not addressed. But it might be from someone else's perspective, you know, relatively unimportant and quite new to them to find that this has led to estrangement. So I think it depends who you're speaking with.
And Joshua, from your book, you have many examples of families that you have worked with, and it's pretty clear that everyone views things in a, it might be the same family, but everyone has their own unique reality about who they are, how they fit in, what actually happened, what is their relationship to their adult and to their parent, I should say, or to each other.
No, I think it's hugely important that there are separate realities in every family. And I think that a parent could credibly feel like they did a good job raising their child, and then their adult child, or now adult child, could feel like, no, actually, you didn't. You missed something really important about me that I really need you to address. And the other part that's really important about this discussion is the way there's a very huge disparity in generations in terms of what gets labeled as harmful, abusive, traumatizing, neglectful behavior. There was a study done a few years ago by the Australian psychologist Nick Haslam, and he talked about the concept creep that's occurred over the past 30 years, so that there's been an enormous expansion over what gets diagnosed and also a lowering of what gets labeled as problematic or diagnosable. And so one of the things I see all the time in my practice is that the adult child saying, no, you emotionally abused me, you neglected me, you harmed me. And the parents going, what emotional abuse I gave you in childhood anybody would have dreamed of. And so, you know, a lot of my work is helping parents to learn how to communicate with their child more in their language, because typically, and I think Lucy's research bears this out, it's more common that the adult child is the one cutting off the contact.
Well, and Lucy, going back to you, and I'm thinking, I mean, we are talking about family estrangement and even cutting off ties, but I wonder whether it's more common for families to sort of put up with each other, maybe emotionally distance from each other, but not have the kind of intimacy and caring relationship that they might want, but just kind of standing by each other for the sake of the family.
I think it's really fascinating to dig into exactly what we mean when we're talking about estrangement, because you're right, for some people that might mean having low contact, and for others it might be no contact. And if we, you know, when you read kind of academic articles from the 1970s, researchers might find siblings kind of saw each other once a year and exchanged cards. And there was no sense in that era, in that time, that that was problematic or estrangement. It was just how things were. And I think now that we have, you know, smartphones and technology, it's so much easier to stay in contact, that the norms have kind of shifted. So now if you see someone once or twice a year, you could think of that as being problematic, whereas perhaps it is just a continuation of how things have been in the past.
How do you see estrangement then, Joshua? I mean, we could spend the hour defining it. I don't want to do that, but how do you define it?
Well, I think Lucy's raising an interesting point that if we didn't have a term for it before, would it have been considered an estrangement or just sort of appropriate distance? I mean, I think that social media, not social media, but cell phones, the fact that we can be so much in contact with each other for, you know, within seconds from any part of the world, you know, whatever benefits there were, I think it really makes relationships much more crowded. And I think a certain percentage of estrangements that happen where the adult child, for example, cuts off the parent is because they just feel like the parent's not giving them the kind of organic space that they need to grow and develop their own identity and personhood. I mean, the word that is I see in every single letter from every single estranged adult child is boundaries. You need to respect my boundaries. And I think it's in part because of the way that cell phone makes texting and calls and communication much more invasive and intrusive. But also in the past four decades, at least in the United States, parents have become much more intensive, much more involved. They're spending much more time with their children. They're much more guilt-ridden. They're much more anxious because they're worried about not being able to launch their children into an adulthood. And I also think whatever benefits there are, and there are benefits, there's also a way that this generation has felt like in some ways they've gotten too much from their parents, and they don't know any other way to feel separate than to just go, I just need to be completely out of contact with you.
And I do want to pick up on that. We're almost up on a break here. Lucy, but let me just quickly go to you. Do you see then sort of this issue about boundaries, that that's really significant in trying to understand estrangement?
Yeah, I think it's something that I see a lot when you're on different social media sites, people talking about estrangement. I haven't personally heard it so much in my own interviews or surveys, but I can appreciate that it's in our vernacular now. It's something that we probably have more awareness of than we have had in previous generations. And as Josh says, we have so much more need for them now, because we can be in contact so frequently and so often.
Well, let's take that short break and then we'll get back to our conversation talking about family estrangement today on The Connection. That's developmental psychologist Lucy Blake. Psychologist Joshua Coleman with us as well. And we're going to take that short break. Joshua Coleman, senior fellow with the Council on Contemporary Families. Lucy Blake, senior lecturer at the University of the West of England. We'll be right back.
The candidates for November are set.
I know Donald Trump's type.
Between now and Election Day.
We are not going back.
A campaign season unfolding faster.
Kamala Harris is not getting a promotion.
Than any in recent history.
Make America great again.
Follow it all with new episodes every weekday on the NPR Politics Podcast.
You're listening to The Connection here on WHYY in Philadelphia. And in case you're just joining us, we are talking about family estrangement, what drives parents and children apart, what it takes to make amends and rebuild the relationship, and how to grieve and move on when reconciliation is impossible. And again, our guests are developmental psychologist Lucy Blake. She wrote a book called No Family is Perfect, A Guide to Embracing the Messy Reality. Joshua Coleman with us as well, and his book is Rules of Estrangement, Why Adult Children Cut Ties and How to Heal the Conflict. Joshua, if I can go to you, you begin your book by talking about what happened between you and your daughter. She was an adult at the time, where for several years she really cut you out of her life. You describe the obvious pain of what was happening and how that hurt you and I guess confused you. What was her complaint?
Well, I was married and divorced in my 20s and have an adult daughter who I'm very close to. But there was a period of time in her early 20s where she wanted to talk about the fact that when I got remarried and had children from my second marriage, how she felt in many ways displaced and unseen and kind of pushed to the side, and that the children from my second, which is my current marriage, I got a much better kind of quality of life, which is all, I mean, that's certainly true. So, you know, when she went to talk with me about it, I think I was more defensive. I was more wanting to explain it. And I think she just felt misunderstood and like I wasn't really getting it and empathizing with her. And so she became more and more distant until she cut off contact. And it wasn't really till I began to just think that I have to, you know, do a much better job of just listening and not defending and not explaining and not getting upset, and just empathizing and taking responsibility, that things began to turn. And so we eventually did reconcile, blessedly, and are to this day.
Did you initiate then the reconciliation? Did you feel like it was your responsibility as the parent, even though she was an adult, a young adult, but as a parent, that you needed to try to figure out how to fix this thing?
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, from the adult child's perspective, they're doing it because they feel like it's the healthiest, if not the best thing for them to do. So the adult child may not be nearly as motivated as the parent. For the parent, there's really no upside. It's all shame, loss, guilt, sorrow, regret, anger, feeling misunderstood. But for the adult child, there may be sadness, guilt, shame, etc. But they may also feel a sense of liberation and pride and strength in pushing back against the parent.
So do you have a very different relationship with your daughter today?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, from my perspective, we were close when we were younger, and then there was a period of difficulty in her teens and being part of a blended family. And, you know, it isn't like I can't empathize with what her complaints were, but it feels like it's worked out.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like the operative word is that you empathize with her rather than blaming her.
Well, that is the key to healing all fractured relationships. But particularly with a parent and a child, because we're sort of in this therapeutic moment, and I don't mean that in a cynical way, where adult children, younger generations in particular, are looking at their childhoods and trying to figure out why they have the issues that they do. And it's critically important that the parent join them there, because nothing compels an adult child to have a relationship with a parent beyond that. Parents, beyond the adult child's desire to do that, and part of the adult child's desire to do that is going to be predicated upon the parent's ability to take responsibility and show empathy and not get defensive and not get mad. And it's not an easy thing to do, but it's a critically important thing to do if you want a reconciliation with your child.
Lucy, let me go to you. And you talked about your, quote unquote, here, your complex family tree that, I guess, like most, maybe all families, it's this mix of connection and estrangement and, you know, togetherness and conflict. You want to just flesh that out for us a bit?
Yeah, absolutely. I think I always had a sense that my family tree was like a very small potted plant compared to other people having like a very sturdy, large oak tree. And I always felt different from people because of that. And there's estrangements on both my mother and my father's side of the family. So it's a very small family. And I think, yeah, when I was doing my doctoral research in my 20s on families, I was just so struck by, oh, I never really read about this. I never really read about kind of family relationships that wither away, or people who don't know where one another live or have each other's numbers. And that really led me then to start studying estrangement kind of 10 years ago and reaching out and reading some of Josh's really important work there, because people really weren't talking about this or researching it 10 years ago. And I found the research for me has just helped me realize this is a really common experience. And if I feel kind of pain or hurt in a family relationship, that really makes me more like other people rather than less like them.
Because we all, you know, no one is perfect, as your book says.
Exactly.
Josh, we're going back to you. And I mean, I made mistakes as a parent. There are things that I regret as a parent. I wish I hadn't either done or said. But what happens when a mistake or something terrible happens that you don't address? that that festers and then becomes something that can really break a relationship apart?
Well, I think it can break a relationship apart, and there are, you know, there's kind of a continuum of problematic things that can occur in a family. There are truly abusive, harmful, neglectful, traumatizing parents, and that can have a long-term impact on that child, both when they're young and also throughout the life course. I mean, they don't necessarily, the research on traumatic experiences show that 75% of people who have been through a traumatic experience recover from them and don't have PTSD, whereas 25% do. But it's absolutely true that that could have a really deleterious effect on that now adult child's desire to work it through or to stay in contact with the parent, particularly if the parent isn't able to change their behavior or they continue to be abusive or humiliating or shaming or critical, and whether it's about their gender identity or their sexuality or who they married or their values. You know, it's hard for me as a psychologist, even somebody who feels very sympathetic to parents, to encourage an adult child to stay in contact with any family member who's not willing to just do the basics of being, you know, being a human being in the family relationship.
I mean, Lucy, for some people, it's you must sever the relationship because it is so hurtful to yourself, to me, or to you.
That's right, and I think, you know, one really common factor that contributes to estrangement is people experiencing emotional abuse, and this is almost like a very difficult kind of abuse to grasp. And researchers have been kind of slow to look at it compared to different kinds of abuse, but we have research in the last 10 years really growing on this topic, really clarifying what that term is and means. And we know that it's a very common kind of experience in family life. It isn't rare, and that emotional abuse can be as damaging or as painful as other kinds of abuse. And that feels like a really important development in research to me for trying to understand those kind of real painful estrangements that can also, you know, really improve the quality of people's lives when they're not engaging in those painful, abusive relationships anymore.
Joshua, you include a couple of families in your book, and also transcripts, what feels like transcripts from conversations that you had with them or they were having with each other. And it is painful. It does feel hurtful to read what people will say to each other.
Well, right. We're all flawed. We're flawed as parents, and we're flawed as, you know, adult children. People can say terrible things to the people that they love out of feeling hurt or kind of repeating their own traumatic history or experiences. And the thing I can 100% agree with what everything that Lucy said. The thing that concerns me, though, about this moment with emotional abuse is that I do think that there's a certain percentage of behaviors that get labeled as emotional abuse on the part of the parent and later get used as a reason to estrange from, you know, often in my experience, a workable parent is willing to repair, who's willing to take responsibility, who's willing to show empathy. And I think the language that we use, the language of trauma, abuse, harm, neglect, they provide a kind of a basis of legitimacy, which on the one hand is the good news about that is that people feel freed to cut off truly impossible, difficult family members. The downside of that is there's a lot of perfectly loving, good, decent, caring, committed parents who would walk over broken glass to heal the relationship with the parents who are being misdiagnosed by the child's therapist or by Instagram influencers, by the larger culture, as narcissists, borderlines, gaslighters. And I think that's a very serious problem right now.
Is this the kind of concept creep that you were talking about earlier?
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. It is. And because these are often parents who, you know, by, you know, it's easy to say, well, by your standards, but, you know, often the other siblings in the family say that what the allegations are of the adult child aren't true, that even hearing the history from the adult child, it, you know, that I think that the normal slings and arrows of family life that mm-hmm. you know, to Lucy, the point of Lucy's, the title of Lucy's book, No Family's Perfect, they're all, in fact, highly imperfect. But I think we're kind of medicalizing and problematizing behaviors that are just part of the suffering of growing up in a family with imperfect people.
Let me just quickly reintroduce the two of you. We are talking about family estrangement today on The Connection, and that psychologist Joshua Coleman wrote a book called Rules of Estrangement, Why Adult Children Cut Ties and How to Heal the Conflict. Lucy Blake is the author of No Family is Perfect, A Guide to Embracing the Messy Reality. Lucy, let me just give you a chance to respond to what Joshua was saying earlier, which is that we have sort of opened up this definition of emotional abuse and maybe made it harder for people to reconcile.
Yeah, I think there's perhaps the vulnerability that all of us can feel here, that
sure.
Behaviors we're engaging in now and how parents are raising children now, we don't really know how that is going to be understood and talked about in kind of 40, 50, 60 years time. And I think that can feel really difficult to know that sand is kind of shifting beneath your feet, that something that feels really well-intentioned and really caring in our present 2024 in 50 years time might be thought of very differently. But I also think we have this shift in the social sciences more generally now to kind of working with people in developing definitions. So rather than researchers or clinicians coming up with a list of behaviours or actions, now there's a real call for researchers to work with people who have experienced emotional abuse to try and understand, what is it you mean by this term? What was the specific behaviour and what was the impact of that? And I feel like that's a really helpful shift and trend, mm-hmm. And one to be welcomed. But I appreciate the complexity of the issues.
But it seems, Joshua, I mean, a good therapist wouldn't take sides, you know, wouldn't put ideas into somebody's head, but would help them understand what issues are unresolved within the family.
Well, a good therapist would in fact do that.
Right.
Tragically, there's a lot
there are not enough of them, you're saying?
There really aren't enough of them, and there's a lot of untrained people out there, and there's a lot of people who sort of assume that problems in adult functioning must stem from problematic childhood experiences. And in fact, some do, but it doesn't pay enough attention to the role of genetics, sibling relationships, random good luck, random bad luck, cohort. I mean, the research by Jean Twenge, for example, and right. Jonathan Haidt, which shows that Gen Z, those born between 1995 and 2012, roughly, they're having enormous problems with depression, anxiety, suicidal ideation, and actually committing suicide. And now, do we imagine the parents have become much more traumatizing and neglectful over the past, you know, 3 or 4 decades? I would say no. But if a lot of these kids are going to show up into therapy with a so-called trauma-informed therapist who's going to assume that if they have these issues, then the only place to look is childhood. I mean, as a psychologist, I always will look at a childhood, but it's not the only place I'm going to look.
Well, let me pick up on that, because again, Joshua, in your book, you include a lot of stories of families that you have worked with, and a lot of it seems to be about some of these unresolved families of origin issues, things that, you know, the parents of children who want to be estranged from them, that they had their own issues with their own parents, and it seems to live on from one generation to the next.
Absolutely. I mean, there is the notion of the intergenerational nature of trauma, that trauma gets passed from generation to generation. So those cases absolutely exist. I'm just saying there's a good news, bad news here. I celebrate that we're developing a richer language of emotional abuse and trauma and harm and neglect, and that it gives people a kind of social legitimacy to talk about the ways that they felt hurt by their parents, and for those parents who are healthy enough to have that conversation and take responsibility, it can really deepen the relationship. But on the other hand, it can also, that language can legitimize cutting off a very workable parent who did a decent job. And that's the part that concerns me.
Indeed. Lucy, let me go back to you. And Joshua talked about siblings. And obviously families have a multiplicity of relationships in them. And if let's say one sibling has cut off relationship with the parents, that does create, or can create, it seems to me, problems or conflicts for the other sibling that might feel caught in the middle between a sibling and then the parents.
Absolutely. So I think family is a place where there is this expectation of loyalty, and taking sides is an expectation. Like it can be quite a difficult place in which to remain neutral, and that can, I think that neutrality can be hurtful to people who are caught in an estrangement or a conflict. So yeah, we absolutely find that estrangement between parents and children can then spill out and lead to estrangement between siblings, and sometimes that's kind of a direct result that happens quite quickly, and sometimes it's something that can happen over time, as it's difficult for a sibling to kind of stay in the middle, as you say.
And Joshua, how do we help that sibling?
Well, what I always tell parents to say is, first of all, you don't have to be my advocate or my voice. If the sibling is estranged from the parents, but not from the other sibling. So you don't have to be my advocate. You don't have to be my voice. You don't have to be my spy. And as importantly, that perhaps you have the same complaints about me. Maybe you're not estranged from me, but you have the same complaints or different complaints, and that you don't have to sort of represent my value or honor as a parent by, you know, either siding with me or telling me that I was better than you think that I am. So I think all those things can relieve the non-estranged sibling from the pressure that Lucy's talking about.
I hate to do this to you, Joshua. We're almost up in a break here, but do all parents love their children equally? Sorry about that. Go ahead.
I don't know that all parents feel as affectionate or tender as to each child, because some children are really difficult and impossible, and other children are just, you know, super easy and nice and gracious. So probably the answer is no, they probably don't.
Well, let's take that short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation talking about family estrangement. Today of The Connection, looking at it from multiple angles. And again, that is psychologist Joshua Coleman. He's a senior fellow with the Council on Contemporary Families, wrote a book called Rules of Estrangement, Why Adult Children Cut Ties and How to Heal the Conflict. Also with us, developmental psychologist Lucy Blake. She's a senior lecturer at the University of the West of England in Bristol, author of No Family is Perfect, A Guide to Embracing the Messy Reality. Much more after this short break. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
The candidates for November are set.
I know Donald Trump's type.
Between now and Election Day.
We are not going back.
A campaign season unfolding faster.
Kamala Harris is not getting a promotion.
Than any in recent history.
Make America great again.
Follow it all with new episodes every weekday on the NPR Politics Podcast.
You're listening to The Connection here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen, and our guests are psychologist Joshua Coleman and psychologist, developmental psychologist Lucy Blake. Lucy, let me just pick up. We were talking about siblings before the break, but I'm thinking, you know, if in an extended family, someone does sever the ties, I mean, there are obviously even beyond siblings, there are grandparents, there are cousins and aunts and uncles. And I'm just thinking about the kind of ripple effect if someone cuts ties, how that ripples through a family.
Yeah, absolutely. This is one of the kind of main ways that estrangement does affect people's lives. It's rarely just affecting one relationship, but it does spill out and affects those other relationships too. So estrangement from a sibling might mean losing contact or having less contact with nieces and nephews. It might mean that nieces and nephews might not even know that they have aunts and uncles who exist, for example. Grandparents might go through periods of seeing their grandchildren, and then after an estrangement, that contact and that relationship ends, which can be deeply distressing for grandparents. So I think it's a really complex experience, estrangement. It isn't just isolated to the one relationship.
Joshua, going back to you, and I know neither of you have, you know, seven easy ways or seven hard ways to become estranged from your family, that there are no hard and fast rules. But as a clinician, are there some patterns that you see that tell you as a therapist, this is not going to work? I mean, that there someone has crossed a line that cannot be uncrossed.
Well, certainly, but I think every therapist needs to do their due diligence if their client is the adult child who's contemplating cutting them off. So, for example, if I'm working with a parent, I will offer to speak to the adult child about their perspective so I can get an objective sense of their perspective. And if I'm working with the adult child and they're my client, I will offer it to see if they want me to talk. They don't always want me to do that, but I'll offer to talk to the parent to see if something better can be made in terms of the relationship. I mean, some of the most problematic behaviors of parents can come just from not having the language, not knowing how to communicate. And they may genuinely say that they love and care about their parent, their adult child, but not really know what they need to do to repair it. And what they need to do it is extensive, but they may not have the language. So, but if I've done the due diligence, or I believe that my client has done the due diligence, and it's just clear to me that the parent is just completely unrepentant and they're not willing to do anything to change, and the engagements with their adult child just leaves the adult child feeling shamed, humiliated, criticized, terrible about themselves all the time. I mean, to me, you know, as a clinician, it would be very hard for me to say, well, just get back in the ring and, you know, whatever.
And I would assume for some people that rift might last a year, 5 years, you know, a decade or more. But there might be a time when it feels safe to come home or come back again.
Well, right. And for some parents, you know, an estrangement can kind of be a shot across the bow, sort of a, you're not taking this seriously enough. I mean, in my own case, I felt like I didn't take it seriously enough till my daughter stopped talking to me. And I was like, wait, I really, you know, this is really deeply a lot more serious than I realized, and I had to do a much deeper sense of investigation in myself about why this was going on. And I think estrangement, the upside to it, if there is one, is that it can be a wake-up call for the parent that they have to really grapple with something that they may not have really dealt with yet.
Lucy, do you see an upside to estrangement?
Oh, I think that's such a hard question. I think it will just depend on it will depend on the relationship and the estrangement. I think, you know, as we've kind of talked about over the course of the hour, parents and children are often coming with different perspectives. So for parents, being a mother or a father is such a central identity, and it's a time, especially if parents retire, they might have more time. And adult children are often, they have many different identities and different competing demands, like raising their own children and work and friends and relationships. And so I think, you know, as we've talked about, that estrangement might have more benefits for adult children than it does do for parents generally. But that will really depend, because no two estrangements are the same, and there's lots of different dynamics and things that contribute to estrangement.
Joshua, you talk about making amends, which you say is about humility, not humiliation. Can you flesh that out for us?
Yeah, for so many parents, their attitude is like, well, they can apologize to me. I was a great parent. Why should I apologize to them? And, you know, I say, well, first of all, there's a notion of separate realities, that you may, even if I think you were a good parent, you're clearly there's something about your parenting that your child is really objecting to. And you have to be open to that reality. And making amends is really about taking responsibility, finding the kernel of truth, if not the bushel of truth, in the child's complaints, not explaining, not defending, not getting mad. And really, you know, and I always encourage parents to start out the letter, I think, as I said earlier, with a statement like, you wouldn't do this unless you felt like it was the healthiest thing for you to do, because that announces to the child that that they're willing to see this as an act of health on the part of the child, even if they don't feel like that. To the parent, it feels catastrophic. They don't feel like it's an act of health. Certainly not for them. They don't feel like it's an act of health for their child. But their child wouldn't be doing it unless they felt in some ways like it had an enormous benefit to them. You know, so the parent has to get on the same page with the adult child. And also to show that they're willing to let the adult child set the rules of engagement. What are their boundaries? How do you want me to engage with my grandchildren? What political topics are off limits? What is too much? How much is too much contact? You know, that the parent's going to have to be willing to shift their view of what they might have thought their relationship was going to be like with their adult child, more in the direction of what that adult child wants or needs.
Lots of questions there that need to be asked.
Yes, lots of questions. Showing curiosity and empathy and taking responsibility, those are the really key ingredients. Not getting defensive, not getting mad, not, you know, guilt-tripping your child or reminding them of all the good things that you did for them. None of that will work. It will not persuade your child that you're really able and willing to have a relationship that's going to be more on their terms.
We've been talking about estrangement, viewing it that it's the child who leaves the parent, essentially. And I wonder, Lucy Blake, is that generally what happens? Are there instances where the parent says, I want nothing to do with you, to their child?
Yeah, absolutely. So we really are still quite in the early days of research on estrangement. So some of these questions are yet to be answered. But certainly in the research I've done, there are a minority of parents who do initiate estrangement from their adult children. And sometimes it's for similar reasons that we've heard from adult children, which is to maintain their safety and their well-being. So sometimes if there's abusive dynamics from the adult child to the parent, then that is a case where parents might feel that cutoff is the only option that they have.
And there can be cutoff parents who cut off contact with their children because of gender identity or sexual orientation. They can essentially disown their child because they're gay. Lucy, this has certainly happened more than
absolutely.
Just a little bit.
That's a common cause to estrangement and a really important one to acknowledge, absolutely.
And Joshua, from that perspective, what is the impact on the child?
Well, it's devastating. You know, I mean, it's not as common, but it certainly does happen because the parent disapproves of the child's religion if they go outside the faith and it's a deeply religious family, or they disapprove of their gender identity or sexuality. And yeah, it's devastating to the child. They feel, you know, the love of a parent is so critical to our identity and self-esteem and resilience and feelings of value and worth. And to have a parent cut them off is a devastating event.
Indeed. Joshua, let me ask you about, you know, when there are political disagreements and, you know, we're living in a time of intense political disagreements and partisanship. How much does that drive estrangement within families?
Well, there was a survey done in 2016 by the Reuters, Ipsos Reuters poll that found that some 16% of families became estranged around political differences. And I haven't seen a more recent survey, but it wouldn't surprise me if it was even greater. And the problem is that our political identities have become the strongest value signifier of how we identify ourselves and how we identify the other person. So, for example, you know, 15, 20 years ago, maybe less, if you knew your kid was going to marry a Republican and you were a Democrat and they wanted to marry a Republican, you know, you might feel like, well, I'd rather they not, but as long as they love each other, that's all that matters. Now it's like, no, they're the enemy. And people feel like, you know, if that person's in the opposite party, then they also feel legitimized towards political violence, towards contempt, towards anger, towards hatred. So it's not unusual if there's a difference in family members around political differences that can be a pathway to estrangement.
Is that true in England, Lucy Blake?
Yes, I was just thinking of Josh's earlier point about how important it is to look out and zoom out at the wider context, not just focus in on the family itself. And here in the UK, you know, around Brexit, that was a common kind of media discourse that estrangement was on the rise in families over that issue. But it hasn't been so prevalent here in the past few years. So I think it really will depend a lot on what's going on in different contexts.
Let me go back to you, Joshua, and I'm looking at some of the things that you wrote in your book, 10 New Rules for Parent-Adult-Child Relations. I just want to read three of them. Rule number one, your adult child has more power than you to set the terms of your relationship because they are more willing to walk away. Rule number three, you are not the only authority on how well you performed as a parent. Your adult child gets to have their own narrative and opinions about the past. Rule number 10, just because you had a bad childhood and did a better job than your parents doesn't mean that your adult child has to accept all the ways that they felt hurt by you. Let me pick up on that last one, because I'm sure for the parent, they're saying, hey, you know, I didn't beat you the way my parents beat me. Why are you being so angry with me?
Right. Right. Well, that goes back to Lucy's earlier point that the standards of parenting from one generation may be very different, and who knows what they'll be in, you know, three or four more decades. But right. I mean, we all are sort of oriented around our own childhoods and also how we were raised, and so those things can really create a certain kind of blind spot, because that's why I think the notion of separate realities is so powerful, that you could objectively done a great job as a mom or a dad and given your childhood a childhood that anybody would envy, and your child could still feel like, well, actually, but you know what I really needed was this. You were mm-hmm. really involved, maybe because your parent wasn't involved, but I wish you'd been much less involved. You were too intrusive, and you know, there's so many different permutations of family life, and that's why I think for parents to not get into the right and wrong of it, to seek to understand rather than to prove the child wrong, is really so critical.
Well, and I wondered too, Joshua, whether it really is a challenge then to learn to live with difference, you know, difference of opinion, difference of experience. Yeah, go ahead, flesh that out for us.
No, I think it's absolutely right. And for parents, it's kind of intolerable to feel like you failed your child or hurt them, or, you know, it's probably the most painful feeling in the world. And it also makes it really hard to do the kind of amends work that I think is so critical to do. But you have to learn to kind of develop a tougher skin and accept that you can still hold on to your belief that you did a good job as a parent. But you also have to be able to tolerate your child's belief that you didn't, or that you missed something important about them that they really needed you to see.
So making amends is more than just apologizing. It's many steps beyond that, Joshua.
I think that's well said. I think it's actually a changing your orientation completely. It's giving your child the right and the platform to talk about what they missed about their childhoods or wish that you had done differently, how that's impacted them, that they get to set the terms of the adulthood, that you have to tolerate the ways that you let them down, even if that was the absolute last thing that you wanted to do. Yeah, no, you're right. It's actually a complete change in orientation. It's not just a sorry, sweetheart.
And it's hard, right?
It's so hard.
It's hard to change, right?
It's hard, but it's worth it, because I think the parents who are able to do it can have a much deeper, richer relationship with their child.
Lucy, I'm looking at the subtitle to your book, A Guide to Embracing the Messy Reality. So how do we embrace the messiness?
It's a really good question. I feel like I need to reread the book every year. And
right.
We've got
Remind
kind of
yourself,
the holidays
right?
on the way. I think there's some element of just appreciating that what you see on the adverts and the films and social media when it comes to family is not the reality. Like, it's great that we're talking about estrangement today and that the topic gets more airtime. And it's really important that it does as well, because I think estrangement can make people feel very isolated in their experience. But really, what we know from the research is that it's a common experience in family life that's brought about by really common life events.
But what you're saying is that we often see or maybe hear about sort of fantasy families where everyone looks like they get along, but you're saying that's never the reality.
I think it's rarely the reality.
Rarely.
There are some parents and children who seem to have like high warmth and low contact, but it isn't the kind of 80%. It's a lot smaller than that.
Would you agree, Joshua? We're almost out of time. They were all sort of, well, messy and trying our best, but falling short.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, and that's not just the parents, but it's also the adult children. There are difficult mm-hmm. parents and there's difficult adult children, and I think that makes family life complicated, and the more forgiving and tolerant and accepting we can be, and the more we can take responsibility for the way that we hurt each other, the better we're going to be as families and as a society.
A perfect way to end our conversation. Psychologist Joshua Coleman, thank you very much for joining us today on The Connection.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Senior fellow with the Council on Contemporary Families, wrote a book called Rules of Estrangement, Why Adult Children Cut Ties and How to Heal the Conflict. Lucy Blake, thank you for joining us as well.
Thanks so much for having me.
You're welcome. She's a developmental psychologist, senior lecturer at the University of the West of England, wrote a book called No Family is Perfect, A Guide to Embracing the Messy Reality. Thank you for joining us on The Connection, which airs every Friday and Sunday on WHYY. You can download a podcast of the show wherever you get your podcasts. You can follow us on Instagram and find us on Facebook. Sign up for our newsletter. Go to whyy.org/theconnection. Debbie Builder produces The Connection along with Paige Marie Bessler. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen.